That's our objective.
Well.
There. Adrian, it's good to see
well,
you.
Well, that's we don't condone bootleg video here. We uphold the copyright and to work fast. One year ago, you'll remember from Santa Barbara, Don Minaldi's presentation on the piano library at the University of Maryland that he is the director of. I have yet to get over that cadenza he played. I think we're going to have something equally fun today. And I'm happy to have Dennis Rooney, who will also be on the next session, I think, a producer. Are you on the next session?
Am I what?
On the next session as well.
Oh, yes.
So this is Dennis Rooney afternoon.
Yes, indeed. And you can't get rid of me so soon.
Yeah. And Don Minaldi, to announcer's lot, is not a happy one. Thanks.
What you're about to hear during the next half hour, I think, could be best described as, or at least it's intended as, a sort of lighthearted amusement before we get down to the serious 2 o'clock business of Restoration Roundtable and so on. But what we're going to do is, for about 30 minutes, venture into the fascinating world of classical music broadcasting. More specifically, what is required of classical music announcers on major FM radio stations in the cities of Cleveland, Boston, and Chicago. Now, I should mention that both Dennis here and myself are long-term veterans of that field before we went on to completely different ventures. And I don't think we left the field with too much feeling of regret, but nonetheless, this is sort of a residue, if you will, from our days in the classical music broadcasting field.
Viewed from the perspective of successful refugees.
Now, as you will soon learn, if you aren't aware already, the job of a classical music radio announcer takes a bit more than just a basic knowledge of famous composers and an adequate speaking voice. Those who apply for these jobs as classical music announcers are almost invariably required to record an audition tape that will demonstrate their abilities, or in the case of the people we'll be hearing, lack thereof. We're going to be listening to four unfortunate individuals who apparently believed that they had the right stuff for the job, but as you will hear, all of them have come up somewhat short of the basic requirements. Now, all of you should have three separate pages in the handouts that were we handed out a moment ago. One begins with the words, "Welcome to an evening at Symphony." The second one we'll be presenting is the one that is called "The Announcer's Lot is Not a Happy One." And the third and longest deals basically with operas and opera arias. We're going to be hearing examples of all of these, and I think what we're going to do is that I will attempt to give you, first of all, an accurate professional reading of the first of these, after which we'll hear an individual on his audition tape reading the same text. And then Dennis will do the same with the second after some introductory comments on that. And then we'll conclude with the third and longest one. Not everybody of the four people we'll be listening to reads every one, as you will see, but all four of them do read the middle one, "The Announcer's Lot is Not a Happy One," from which comes the title of this presentation. Do I need to say anything else before we launch into the first?
I would simply point out, as we listen to these, that not only do you encounter these individuals' responses to the difficult and specialized terminology that a classical format announcer will routinely encounter, it's also an interesting study in the lack of word recognition that is commonly encountered among people who have not been trained or learned how to read text aloud in a way that is not only comfortable, but is naturally phrased. The other thing is that you also encounter the egos that we find among the aspirants, you might say, to careers in broadcasting. And you will hear various facets of that in the material that follows.
All right, just here is my attempt at how I would read the first script, Welcome to an Evening at Symphony, if I were auditioning for the job, and then we will hear another person who auditioned some years back in Boston. Welcome to an Evening at Symphony, 5 hours of the world's greatest music presented Monday through Friday on WCRB. Tonight's concert will include a canon by Johann Pachelbel, the Symphony No. 9 by Dmitri Shostakovich, a nocturne by Gabriel Fauré, ballet music from La Gioconda by Amilcare Ponchielli, music from the symphonic cycle Mavlost by Beatrice Smetana, Antonin Dvorak's Symphony No. 2, and the ballet El Amor Brujo by Manuel de Falla. We begin this concert with a canon by Pachelbel, arranged for string orchestra by Karl Münchinger, who conducts the Stuttgart Chamber Orchestra. Evening at Symphony continues with a nocturne by Gabriel Fauré. Jean Martinon conducts l'Orchestre de Concert Lamoureux. The music of Evening at Symphony continues with ballet sections from the opera La Gioconda by Ponchielli. Franco Caracciolo conducts the Scarlatti Orchestra. Dvorak's Symphony No. 2 concludes our Evening at Symphony now as we hear a performance by the Halle Orchestra under the direction of Sir John Barbaroli.
Welcome now to an Evening at Symphony. 5 hours of the world's greatest music presented Monday through Friday on WCRB. Tonight's concert will include a known by Johann Pachelbel, the Symphony No. 9 by Dmitri Shostakovich, a nocturne by Gabriel Fauré, ballet music from La Gioconda by Amilcare Ponchielli, music from the symphonic cycle Mavlost by Beatrice Smetana, Antonin Dvorak's Symphony No. 2, and the ballet El Muro Brujo by Emile de Falla. We begin this concert with a known by Pachelbel, arranged for a string orchestra by Karl Münchinger, who conducts the Stuttgart Chamber Orchestra. Evening at Symphony continues now with a nocturne by Gabriel Fauré. Jean Martinon conducts l'Orchestre des Concerts Lamoureux. The music of the evening at Symphony continues with ballet sections from opera La Giardona by Ponchielli. Franco Carbaglioli conducts the Scarlatti Orchestra. Dvorak's Symphony No. 2 concludes our evening at Symphony now as we hear a performance by the Halle Orchestra under the direction of Sir John Barbaroli.
The kid was obviously ahead of his time. If you had a latte with grenadine, it would be a scarlet latte, I guess. About 50 years ago, when he worked at WFMT in Chicago, the great classical format commercial broadcaster in America's then second city, Mike Nichols created an announcer audition that was a wonderful verbal steeplechase, and it remains to this day a model of its kind. And I thought that before we listened to the four unsuccessful candidates for various reasons read the same text, that I would read it for you. The announcer's lot is not a happy one. In addition to uttering the sibilant, mellifluous cadences of such cacophonous sounds as Hans Schmidt Iserstedt, Karl Schuricht, Nicanor Zavaleta, Hans Knappertsbusch, and the Hammerklavier Sonata, he must thread his vocal way through the complications of L'Orchestre de Suisse Romande, the Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam, the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, and other complicated nomenclature. However, it must by no means be assumed that the ability to pronounce L'Orchestre de la Société de Concert du Conservatoire de Paris with fluidity and verve outweighs an ease, naturalness, and friendliness of delivery when at that omnipresent microphone. For example, when delivering a diatribe concerning Claudio Muzio, Beniamino Gigli, Hedy Plumacher, Giacinto Prandelli, Hilda Rüssel-Meiden, and Lina Paliugi, 5 out of 6 is good enough if the 6th one is mispronounced plausibly. Jessica Dragonette and Margaret Truman are taken for granted. Poets, although not such a constant annoyance as polysyllabically named singers, creep in now and then. Of course, Dylan Thomas and W.B. Yeats are no great worry. Composers occur almost incessantly, and they range all the way from Albéniz, Alvéan, and Horwick through Wolf-Ferrari and Zeisel. Let us reiterate that a warm, simple tone of voice is desirable, even when introducing the Bach cantata Ich hatte viel Bekümmernis or the Monteverdi di opera L'Incoronazione di Poppea. Such, then, is the warp and woof of an announcer's existence in diesen heiligen Hallen. And now the 4 candidates.
The WFMT announcer's lot is not a happy one. In addition to uttering the sibilant, mellifluous cadences of such cacophonous sounds as Hans Schmidt, Isserelic, Carl Schur-Isaac, Nicandor Zibelletia, Hans Knapper-Prustrick, and the Hamilskiversker Sonata, he must thread his vocal way through the complications of L'Orchestre de la Suisse Romande, the Cordon Bleu Orchestra of Amsterdam, the Leipzig Gioconda's Orchestra, and other complicated nomenclature. However, it must by no means be assumed that the ability to pronounce L'Orchestre de la Sonate des Concerts du Conservatoire de Paris with fluidity and suave outweighs an ease, naturalness, and friendliness of delivery when at omnipresent microphone. For example, when delivering a diatribe concerning Claude Muzio, Benjamin Gilgalel, Hattie Plumacher, Giannanto Prandiello, Heidel Roselle, Majan, and Lina Pachebergi, 5 out of 6 is good enough if the 6th one is mispronounced plausibly. Jessica Dragonette and Margaret Truman are taken for granted. Poets, although not such a constant annoyance as plausibly named singers, creep in now and then. Of course, Dylan Thomas and W.B. Yeats are no great worry. Composers occur almost incessantly, and they range all the way from Les Benzeth, Alvin and O'Rourke, through Wolf, Ferrari, and Cecil. Let us reiterate that a warm, simple tone of voice is desirable. Even when introducing the Bach cantata, Ich hatte viel Bekümmernis, or Monteverdi's opera Le Incoronazione di Poppea, such then is the warp and woof of an announcer's existence in Diensen, Heel, Glimmerhallen.
Warp and woof, indeed. The next candidate is a little less halting, but he has his own problems.
The announcer's lot is not a happy one. In addition to uttering the sibilant, mellifluous cadences of such cacophonous names as Hans Schmidt, Isersted, Karl Schurntunt, Nicanor, Zabelita, Hans Knapper-Prustrick, and Hammersveller Sonata, he must thread his vocal way through the complications of L'Orchestre di Suze Remende, the Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam, Leipzig, Guinanda's Orchestra, and other complicated nomenclature. However, it must be by no means be assumed that the ability to pronounce L'Orchestre di La Sotte, di Concert Duc Esorcio, di Paris with fluidity, and verve outweighs an ease, naturalness and friendliness of delivery, when that omnipresent microphone, for example, when delivering a diatribute concerning Claudia Mosello, Benamemio, Giglietti Plumature, Gigusintio Pradileli, Hildi Roselle, Majden, and Lidi Pagdiv. Five out of the six is good enough. If the six is mispronounced, possibly, Jessia Dragnote and Margaret Truman are taken for granted. Poets, although not such as consonant annoyance, such as polysyllabically names, singers creep in now and then. Of course, Dylan Thomas and W.B. Yeats are not great worry. Composers occur most incessantly, and they range all the way from Albinades, Alfervin, and Iruk, through Wolf, Ferrari, and Cecil. Let us reiterate the warm, simple tone of the voice is desirable, even when introducing Bach Cantatea, Ich hätte viel Becker numerus, or the Vantiverdi opera L'Incarnazione di Poppea. Such is the warm and wolf of the announcer's existence in the Decem Heligen Halion.
Warm wolf indeed. What is always interesting in listening to these is not just the wrong guesses, but the total surprise with which certain things greet the candidate. They just stop. It's like a balloon. It just deflates.
The announcer's lot is not a happy one. In addition to uttering a sibilant mistress Canadians of such, oh, whatever that word, sound as Hans Schmidt Irrestren, Karl Schumacher, Milan Zebelat, Hans Karabrach, and Hamar Kalafer sonata, he must trend his vocal way through the complicants of the L'Opera di la Suze Romande, the Kanzagron Orchestra di Amsterdam, di Wadzing Krandach Orchestra, and other complicated nomenclature. However, it must be by no means by assured that the ability to pronounce the L'Orchestre de la Soviet di Concert, di Conservatoire di Paris, de fluently of very outwards and of ease, naturalness and friendliness of delivery when it may be omitted microphone. For an example, when delivering a concerning Claudio Musico, Binamanuño Gigli, Prunjo Geronti Pradelli, Heldo Rossi Balgian, Linda Pragiulel. Five of the six is given if the six is microphonically correct. Jessica Dragnon, Marguerite Truman D, taken for granted. Poets, although not such announced as named singers, creep in now and then. Of course, Dylan Thomas, W.B. Yeats are no great worry. Composers occur almost incessantly, and they range all the way from Alves, Alphine, Erzens through Wolf, Fredelli, Wolf Ferrari, and Zell. Let us registrate from warm, simple tone of voice is desirable when introducing Bach cantata Ich will ver Brunes of Monteverdi's L'Opera L'Incarnazione di Pompeii. Such is the rap and wolf of announcer's existence in Decem Heligen Halion.
Well, he got Yeats right anyway. Now, this is a man with a truly sporting attitude towards this. But what fascinates me is not just his pretentiousness and his incompetence, but this Italian accent, this all-purpose Italian accent that he applies to everything. And it sounds like, you know, he was coached with Eric Rhodes' Tonetti in The Gay Divorcee. So
I have one footnote to add to this last candidate whom we heard. Although I wasn't there at the time of the audition, I was reliably informed that after he completed the reading and came back into the control room, his comment was, "Well, at least the German wasn't too bad."
So here's the last one.
The announcer's lot is not a happy one. In addition to uttering the sibilant mellifluous.
No. It's, yes. Yeah. Four.
That was four.
Then.
You need six.
It's 3 p.m. in Chicago, and time for our annual...
That's not it. No, it should be four. I mean, the last one you played...
The WFMT announcer.
No, that's not right.
The WFMT announcer's lot is not a happy one. In addition to uttering the sibilant, mellifluous cadence of the cacophonous sounds as Hans Schmidt Esderstadt, Carl Schurich, Nicanor Sabaleta, Hans Christian Bopf, and the Hammenkleifer Sonata, he must thread his vocal way through the complications of l'orchestra de la Schwarz Romande, Concertgebouw Orchestra of Amsterdam, the Le Spring, de Wanderhandes Orchestra, and other complicated non-clementure. However, it must by no means be assumed that the ability to pronounce l'orchestra de la Société de Concerts de Conservatoire de Paris with fluidity and verve outweighs an ease, naturalness, and friendliness of delivery when at the omnipresent microphone. For example, when delivering a de la troupe concerning Claudia Muzio, Benemio Gligli, Hedy Plumusher, Giansanti Prandelli, Hilde Russell Magin, and Lena Pegli, 5 out of 6 is good enough if the 6th one is mispronounced plausibly. Jessica Dragnet and Margaret Truman are taken for granted. Poets, although not such a constant annoyance as polysyllabically named singers, creep in now and then. Of course, Dylan Thomas and W.B. Yeats are no great worry. Composers occur almost incessantly, and they range all the way from Albanese, Alvin Arik, through Wolf Ferrari and Zell. Let us reiterate that a warm, simple tone of voice is desirable, even when introducing the Bach cantata Eis hatte will Bekermenis, or Monteverdi's opera De Ancorazzino di Popea. Such then is the warp and woof of an announcer's existence in Dison Helgen Hallen.
May we all pass through life with fluidity and verve. Now you have the third sheet on your handout is copy for a mythical opera program. And rather than have either of us read this to you, you can just follow along and see what has been made, what has been wrought from this material.
It's 3 p.m. in Chicago and time for our annual hour and a half in which operatic artists sing arias and songs. Here's what you'll be hearing in this year's collection. Herbert von Karajan leads soloists in the Champagne Song from J. Strauss Jr.'s Die Flundermaus. Gottlieb Frick and Gerhard Unger sing Viva Bacchus from Mozart's The Abduction from the Seraglio. And Melisa Korja sings Martine Eller Artine from the same opera. Fritz Wunderlich sings Forgot Dir, Harsin Gilbertin, Il Mio Tesoro from Mozart's Don Giovanni. And Christina Dotcom sings Der Halle Rashi from that composer's The Magic Flute. Leonard Warren sings Largo al Factotum from Rossini's The Barber of Seville. And Montserrat Caballé sings Di Amor al Dolce Impero from Rossini's Armanda. Giuseppe Borgeling sings in Swedish, Now I'm Broke and Free as a Bird from Malacher's The Beggar Student. Regine Crispin sings, Oh, cher monsieur, excusez-moi, from Christine's Fifi. André D'Arcour sings, Hercule Poirot d'être Sadat from Bondoir's La Dame Blanche. Giuseppe Di Stefano sings De Quella Pera from Verdi's Il Trovatore, briefly interrupted by Maria Callas. Ferrucci Tagliavani sings Una Furtiva Lagrima from Donizetti's Il Fla d'Amore. And Luciano Pavarotti sings a scene from the composer's The Daughter of the Regiment. Tito Schipa sings a Scarlatti's Le Violette. Renata Tebaldi sings Verdi's Stornello. Izia Penza sings a Scarlatti's Chevoix in Amorasi. Emilita Galle Cruci sings Cette Histoire Amorcieuse from Auber's Manon Lescaut. Nicolai Guetta sings Mes Amis Ecoutez la Histoire from Adam's La Passion de la Jeune Jumet. Rita Stretch sings De Libes, Le Fils de Cadet. Leontine Price sings the Seguidilla from Bizet's Carmen, interrupted briefly by Franco Corelli. Conchito Sevilla sings the Choralesis from Chappé's Lejandras de Zabedio. Nicolai Juval sings Peepoff from Meyerbeer's Les Huguenots. And Joan Sutherland sings Siet Buen Loi La 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 Air Cherie from the composer's Le Choix du Nord. Jeannie Terrell sings Mon Dieu, que les hommes sont bontés. And Maria Nocavola sings Au coup d'honneur from the off-box La Perruche. Victoria De Angelis and Elizabeth Schwarzkopf sing The Cat Duet by Rossini. The finale of Act I Rossini's The Barber of Seville is conducted by Alcio Aguilera with Maria Callas and Tito Gobbi among the cast members. The finale of the first act of the composer's L'Italiano in Algeria is directed by Carlo Maria Giolini, with Giulietta Simonetto in the cast. And finally, the finale of Verdi's Falstaff is conducted by Sir George Solti, with Sir Geraint R. Evans as Falstaff.
We have to thank our colleague Don Tate of WFMT in Chicago, still laboring in the vineyards, for some of that material and for graciously sharing it with us and with all of you. And he also included an example of what can happen to even an experienced and extremely skilled announcer.
William Schumann's New England triptych, Be Glad Then America, When Jesus Wept, and Chester. That was the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Leonard Slatkin. This is WNIB, this is WFMT, 98.7 FM, Chicago's fine art station, the radio home of Network Chicago.
And lest you think that was a gag, I can testify that I've made a similar mistake myself. So it can happen to anyone, because wherever perfection is attempted, imperfection always results.
We have one final credit, and that's to Seth Winner of the Seth B. Winner Sound Studios Incorporated for his technical assistance in putting together this motley assemblage of material, which has been, as you see, reserved for posterity.
To which I must contribute a recent instance. As classical radio continues to deconstruct, as both the stations that carry real classical programming diminish with each passing month, and the quality of expertise of the announcing staff grows slimmer and slimmer. I've been in South Florida for the past few weeks, and I've been listening to WXEL out of West Palm Beach, and I want to contribute these two latest examples of what I've heard. The baritone Dmitry Vodostovsky became Hovorovsky. The violinist Miriam Fried, as you might not be surprised to learn, was Miriam Fried. So if any of you are from Indiana, the next time you see Miriam, tell her that her last name in South Florida is Southern Fried. Thank you very much. Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, what is it? This is simply a stress test.
Yeah.
And they obviously, you know, when faced with the unknown or the unfamiliar, the ego responds in a different way. Do I go down in flames or do I try and bluff my way through? Obviously, the third candidate we heard was determined to get through the material in what he thought was an authoritative manner. And, of course, we all remember that classic dictum of broadcasting. It isn't whether or not you say something correctly, as long as you say it with authority. And that was his attempt. Yes, Mike.
They also started shaking, I'm sure, and some of them, and why they couldn't see some of the words. It was a blur.
This brings to mind the famous Abhang of the famous movie in the 70s.
We have chosen. We know that only one hapless unfortunate was named Kevin, but since none of them went on to careers in broadcasting, in which we may be confident. I'm sure they found fulfillment in some other field than broadcasting. And I hope that one of them at least found a career with Flaherty and Vervey. Yes. Presumably. I mean, it was not going, they were probably given, if my experience with audition environments is can be trusted, they were handed the text and they were given 5 or 10 minutes to look it over and then they would cut the audition. It wasn't as if it's, here, kid, you know, sink or swim. I'm sure that nobody would have done that. One, any more? Yes, one more. Steve.
A friend who ran a radio station in another part of the country talked about the inverse, having expert conversation video taught by Leon Pine Pichet.
Well, I had a colleague who got so into pronouncing the foreign terminology correctly that a performance was by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Yes, Seth.